Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Stephen.
And I'm Anoush.
And in this week's podcast, we discuss...
What counts as a sackable offence for an MP?
Is a meaningful vote even possible?
And why do the Tory rebels never rebel?
Helen is off ill, so it is me and Anoush.
Hello.
The EEA option. speaking of people who have vanished but will come back, Anne-Marie Morris has had the Conservative whip given back to her 5 months after she used a word I can't use on this podcast without losing our universal rating.
Yep, she's back, coincidentally, just before a very important vote this evening. But yes, I don't understand why she doesn't have to resign. And I had the same thing with Michael Fallon. So we don't really know exactly what he resigned from the cabinet over, but he was defence secretary and he stood down. So it must have been, you know, something that he thought was substantial. Why doesn't he resign as an MP? That's another thing that really confused me. So have we lost the sort of sackable offence for MPs who do something wrong?
It does kind of feel like we have, if not lost it, we've definitely raised the bar to, I would say, a dangerously high level. Priti Patel, who podcast listeners will know, as an operator, I think is hugely underrated. She very much knows what she wants politically and up until that point had been very effective about getting it. But the level of things she ought to have been sacked for in that scandal before the alarm was triggered was a bit like, really? This is bad, but is this really... How did she have to get to the point she got for her actions to be...
Exactly. So for that day where everyone was following her flight home to the UK, that day didn't have to happen. She could have been asked to stand down 2 days before that because... It was only when further things unfolded that they decided that it was impossible to keep her, which is ridiculous because I feel like a minister in the past would have been fired immediately for something like that. Would. Similarly with Boris Johnson and the case with the woman imprisoned in Iran. I mean, I feel like any minister would have been sacked over that. So, you know, ministers have stood down over dodgy things with their cleaners, you know, hiring with their cleaners.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it is true to say that Blair, Miliband, and to a lesser extent Brown did sack people too easily.
Yeah.
But like Emily Thornberry sacked for tweeting a picture of a house.
Yeah.
Various New Labour ministers sacked for like saying something a little bit left-wing essentially in an interview, right? And now you have a situation where you have a variety of MPs on both sides of the house who are under investigation who may just be allowed to kind of quietly slip back. We have the ongoing question about whether or not Damien Green will have to go.
Yeah.
And while he denies the allegations, to my eyes at least, it feels like we're being asked to believe that Kate Maltby was playing a very long game in order to make these accusations in 2017. If she was also messaging Rosamund Irwin at the Evening Standard a year earlier, right? That just defies credulity to me. David Davis lying about the impact assessments.
Yeah, that's another example.
Well, not lying, sorry, because they got civil servants to find some way where if you technically change the definition of impact assessments, you could say that he was talking about something else, which it did in fact exist, and so he wasn't telling porkies.
Mm.
It does feel to me, and this is just a kind of half-baked theory, so, you know, feel free to shoot it down, that it's a combination of two things. One, May's own sort of psychology and approach to politics. She doesn't like scrutiny. She fought it a lot at the Home Office. And she has an attitude to what I would see as vital parts of the democratic accountability process that I find troubling. Mm-hmm. And then you have a hung parliament which incentivizes that still further because they can't afford to piss anyone off. And so you have kind of two quite negative forces in terms of the government's ability to sack ministers or say to MPs, well, you're not standing as our candidate again next time.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I think she has a sort of bunker mentality, doesn't she? She's sort of like, you can't come after my team because I don't want any of them to be scrutinised. I don't want myself to be scrutinised. And obviously, why wouldn't she have that attitude? Because she was in the Home Office for so long and there were so many things that she did she could have had to resign over, and she managed to stay. So perhaps she has the same sort of attitude towards her government as her reign over the Home Office, which lasted for such a long time. And also, I think really what makes a sackable offence depends on who the sacker would be. So with Theresa May, we know that she's really, really reluctant to do it. And she was even before she was so weak.
So this is just an idea I've been knocking around today, and I'm just intrigued as to why. So I feel very strongly that people ought to be able to, when they've done something wrong, apologise, be held accountable for it, and then reintegrate into the group. So Anne-Marie Morris has technically apologised twice. Once when she, at the beginning, when she did a I'm sorry for any offence caused. And today when she did a I'd like to apologise again. And you're like, again? She said, for my inappropriate and offensive language, which was a kind of more real apology. Instinctively, I feel that ought to be enough. However, in this case, I feel it isn't. And I'm not sure why I feel it isn't enough.
I think if she hadn't done the I'm sorry if I caused offence type apology when she was first found out, and she actually sort of genuinely looked like she was engaging with what she'd done and why it hurt people, that might have meant that now that we've come to 5 months after, it would have been kind of okay to let her back in, and sort of she's learned a lesson here and she does seem genuinely contrite. Whereas I think it's because the initial reaction is always, well, more often than not, I'm sorry that you found out, rather than I'm sorry that I've done this thing. And I think actually Jared O'Mara is quite a good example of that. So when all of these things were dredged up from message boards that he'd written when he was quite young, he still sort of engaged with what he'd said. He'd gave an interview quite soon after he was in this sort of media storm. And he said, you know, I was a young man. I had all of these ideas about masculinity. And it was actually quite a thoughtful think through of what he'd written. And then, of course, more came out that we don't really know whether or not that's still under investigation. So we don't know about that. But I think that will mean that in future, if Labour do reinstate him, it won't be so bad.
Yeah, I mean, my instinct, I mean, one, as you say, the...
You don't have to agree.
I realise this might just be where I'm being overly cynical, because I think I in theory agree with you, but in practice I kind of just, and this is why I know this is a terrible attitude to have, and this is why I'm, you know, I hope I would not do this were I a juror, but I just feel like I look at what, oh God, this is such a terrible unwoke attitude. I realise instinctively my conclusion is like, yeah, but he probably did it anyway, didn't he? Like, probably the more recent stuff also happened.
Yeah.
Which...
That's the natural thing to think, because you start building a picture of a person.
Yeah, which is not at all fair. But yes, he did at least do a better impression of contrition. And yeah. I think the thing is, if you believe in rehabilitation, which I do, I think a lot of our listeners will rightly then say, yes, but wouldn't you be sacked if you used that word?
Mm.
That is true. However, I think so. There are some instances, I mean, for example, having pornography on your work computer, a sackable offence here at the NS Towers, and I think then it should be a sackable offence in Parliament too. However, there are some things where people go, oh, well, that's not the deal for everyone. We're like, yeah, but it should be. The great example, the Mail having a go at the BBC for Christmas taxis. People going, oh, you know, well, you don't get that if, you know, you work in a shop. It's like, yes, it is true that when I was like doing the Christmas Eve shift and we finished after the last train, I had to wait in the freezing cold for a night bus because the company wouldn't put on a cab for us. And I had the advantage that I worked somewhere with a night bus, right? But the model to emulate there is not the model where,
no,
like, the worker is left out in the cold for an hour, or, you know, they have to walk, or they're forced to own a car, which obviously, as well as being environmentally damaged, is this huge cash sink for the low paid. And I kind of think in this situation, I do think in general, it's positive for people to do what Naz Shah, I think, very sincerely did, which is go, I said these awful anti-Semitic things. I have learned. She showed genuine contrition.
Yeah.
She's won round the community in her constituency.
That's a really good example. I think she's dealt with it.
Whereas it does, yeah. I think, yeah, it is the first apology means that the second apology kind of feels like, oh, well, yeah, now I'm... Partly because it's just like, oh, I've realised the enormity of what I've done. It's just like, so you got to be, what, 50-odd? 50-odd. She's a lawmaker and she's... only just at the age of 50-odd realised that the N-word is bad. I mean, I'm not expecting every member of the House of Commons to have, I don't know, like, read Ta-Nehisi Coates, but I think it's not unreasonable to expect them to be at least aware of, say, the debate around Quentin Tarantino.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, I think it's the initial reaction that shows whether or not their next apology or whatever they do next in terms of grovelling is genuine or not.
And now it's time for a section we like to call...
You Ask Us!
It's almost as if Helen's right here in the room. And the question is being asked about the meaningful vote amendment, which may or may not have passed by the time you listen to it. But it's kind of a question, I guess, about the overall process, which is it really possible to have the meaningful vote that people are asking for?
Yeah, so what is a meaningful vote, first of all? So they are, Theresa May is saying, they are going to get a vote on it, but it's sort of a take it or leave it vote right at the end, you know, when they've already decided what their deal will be. And if that deal is unacceptable to Parliament, if they voted against it, there would be no deal, which would be a hideous scenario. So obviously it's kind of forcing their hand. What the rebels and the Labour Party and other opposition parties want is a meaningful vote, which means a vote earlier in the process, which means that they can actually give their opinion on the deal and send it back and say no, come back with a better one. The reason why Theresa May doesn't think this is possible is because it would be too late and scupper the process.
This is a sentence I don't think I've said before on the podcast, but my instinct is I think Theresa May is right. The thing about the Article 50 process is, in an odd way, it's both a perfect argument for people who think we shouldn't leave for pragmatic reasons. I'm not going to pretend I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people who stands up for Ode to Joy. I love the EU. And I'm aware there are lots of problems with it and the way, particularly around the Eurozone and its attempts to bully the governments of Portugal and Greece. But I just am into the European project. But the kind of pragmatic case is illustrated well with Article 50, which is that if you leave, there's a big bloc next to you which bullies you and you have a horrible time and the process of leaving is so painful it's not worth it.
Mm.
On the other hand, it's also a really good argument for it's this big unfair bloc that has a mechanism designed to punish the departing nation.
Yeah.
We should therefore want nothing out of it. However, regardless of whether or not you feel Article 50 proves or disproves the case to leave, it is the process. And I don't really get where this meaningful vote would occur.
Yeah, I mean, if you did want to have it when they've said they wanted to have it, and it would have to be right after the government strikes a deal. So it would have to be really soon.
Well, the thing is, I think in an odd way, it feels to me that the meaning... Well, so there was one meaningful vote, obviously, was the Article 50 trigger itself.
Yeah.
Not to go over old ground, I both think that voting for Article 50 is the worst mistake that any politician has made for a long time, while also not really seeing how it is reasonable to just the politics of voting against it are just so fraught that I think this idea that a Commons majority was going to be found to block it is crazy.
Yeah. I think that these Tory rebels are just rubbish rebels because they've never rebelled. All of Theresa May's Brexit bills have passed and it's been quite a smooth process. And I know that's not only the Conservative rebels sort of, they're not the only ones responsible for that, but they talk such a good game and then they don't do anything. And it feels like a slightly false rebellion because now, like you say, it's a bit late. Mm. Now they're sort of like sticking their oar in saying they're actually going to do it. And it's frustrating because lots of people who would quite like to remain in the EU were quite excited about the government's tiny majority and weakness and the, you know, the Conservatives did have a majority of MPs who wanted to remain.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, in terms of the other opportunity for a meaningful vote, it would have been it's over the end state. Like, what do we want the final relationship after exit to look like? That's actually the vote where MPs could take some control over the process. But you're exactly right. So the single market amendment yesterday that the Lib Dems had, yes, Labour was whipped to vote against it. But equally, only two Conservatives rebelled. Ken Clark, who's rebelled consistently.
Yeah.
And Anna Soubry, who I honestly feel might have been effectively kind of gradually teased into it via, like, Twitter and the meme.
Because she voted through to trigger Article 50.
She voted.
She didn't, you know, whenever we've had other amendments on the single market, like Chuka Amuna's single market amendment, she hasn't voted for that.
Yeah.
So it does feel like she's sort of been coaxed into it because she's been built up as this figure who's supposed to be like this very rebellious Conservative who never rebels.
I think what I thought was interesting is before the snap election, pro-European Labour MPs, you know, from across the party, from your kind of like you know, Blairiest of Blairites all the way to your, you know, we need to build a social Europe, another Europe as possible, mm-hmm. would go, oh, you know, I've got a lot of time for Anna. She's a principled pro-European. I don't agree with her or anything. But mm-hmm. And then what weirdly started to happen around July of this year is those kind of people go, I'm just tired of her drama. You know, she, yeah, you know, she writes like a piece and then she does nothing.
Yeah,
and
I think that's very true.
And the response to her Guardian article was interestingly, you know, not hostile in a... I'm sure there was some angry abuse as well. But it wasn't just hostile in that way. There were an awful lot of people just like, yeah, sure, Jan. You say that all the time. And it just feel like since then she's kind of like, oh, maybe I should actually rebel. Or perhaps it was the Telegraph mutineers front page. Maybe. Is kind of... But nonetheless, ultimately, you're right. Tory rebels have never really shown any inclination to do so. And this amendment, under the Article 50 process, at the end you get a choice between the deal and no deal. If you vote down and go try again, unless you're setting what you want the government to try again for, right? Like, is what these Conservatives want for us to still be in the single market and customs union? Is it for us to have as close regulatory alignment as possible? What is it that they want?
Yeah, because otherwise you could do that process ad infinitum, couldn't you? It doesn't really make any sense. And I think if they had been opposing these kind of bills from the start... and being actual rebels, then they might not be in the position where they don't like the idea of what the government's going to come back with.
You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Stephen Bush, and my colleague Anoushi Kellyan. We're recorded by India Bork and produced by Caroline Crampton. Our music is Devil by the Devil, licensed under Creative Commons. Our Christmas issue is now in stores.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Freddie here. I want to tell you about a new way you can support the New Statesman's independent journalism. Every morning I send out Morning Call, our daily newsletter covering everything you need to know about British politics. It's free to sign up, plus for just £3 a month, you'll get a recommended daily piece of ours sent to you in full, plus exclusive polling analysis from Ben Walker, a weekly update from Will Dunn, and our featured piece on Sundays. If you enjoy this podcast, you'll love Morning Call. Head to morningcall.substack.com and subscribe now.